Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday pre-market prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Conan, Dennis Dick with you this morning. Today we are being nostalgic. We're going back to our roots and we are reconnecting with fundamentals like our old high school boyfriends and girlfriends. We're reconnecting with our long lost love of the fundies. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about PayPal I want to discuss. We'll talk about ARK Invest and their new space ETF. We'll talk about ATVI had a headline. Tesla had a headline. What else is new there? There's always headlines with Tesla. More fallout from this Archegos blow-up thing. I think I saw some estimate that Credit Suisse would lose as much as $7 billion. I don't think they even know how much they're going to lose yet, but it's going to be a lot. Two guests on the docket for today. First up at 8:35, Joel Kalina, who is the head of technology and media trading at Wedbush Securities. He is great. He will join us at 8:35. And then Jay Young, president and CEO of King Operation, an oil and gas firm, will join us at 9 to talk energy. That being said, everyone, smash that like button. Joel, bring up those charts and tell us how we are doing in the pre-market session.
Oh boy, I'm almost worn out from the pre-market show, man. You guys had me in stitches there. But let's look at the S&P, and we were doing okay, and then we fell apart here around 7 o'clock. We're down 13.25 handles at 39.45.75. I'm just gonna call this whole 39.70 area 70.78 super extra major resistance. That pre-market low 43.25, folks. I don't see much down until Monday's low at 28.75. Crude down a buck, but still over $60. We're down $1.01 at 60.55. Gold, ooh, I hear some of this forced liquidation is kind of leaking over into the gold market. Gold down 25.80 at 16.88.90. Silver marching towards 34. That's down 46 cents at 24.32. And Bitcoin, what's bad for everything else must be good for Bitcoin. This thing will not go down. It's up $1,750 to 59,950. Before I bring Triple D in, I just want to say that everything I say is strictly for informational purposes only. I am not myself today. I got a game at 10 o'clock tonight. It's a pajama game. I'm going to be a nervous wreck the entire day, and I'm going to have to stay up past midnight. So for Michigan to make it Final Four. So please, please take everything with a grain of salt that I say today. You should anyways. You should do your own investment research and consult your own investment advisor. Triple D. What are you seeing? What are you seeing out there? I mean, did you get to your desk in time? I hope you got there by like 7 o'clock because we've had a pretty decent summer.
It's just Groundhog Day. It's the same stocks getting hit every single day, and it's the growth names. I mean, they're oversold. They've been oversold. We've had a couple little bounces, but they continue to be oversold, but they're oversold for good reason. A lot of these growth names were trading at ridiculous valuations. And you know what? This is the market that is reconnecting with reality. And the similarities back to March of 2000 when the tech bubble burst are so, there's so many similarities. What happened was, and everybody thinks, oh yeah, we just crashed. That didn't happen. It took over a year and a half for the NASDAQ to fall the 81% that it did. It was a slow cascade. We called it death by 1,000 cuts. Every day you'd come in and Loosen Technologies would be down another 3%, the most widely owned stock back then. You know, every day you'd come in and your growth names would be down a little bit more, a little bit more. And you're like, okay, they're going to come back. They're going to bounce back. And also what happened early in that, which people don't realize, is that they flocked out of the high PE stuff, out of the growth names, and they flocked into the value names. They flocked into safety trade. We're going to move safe. And then what happened a couple months later? Everything rolled over. And that was because you had the growth names that just could not catch a bit. Stocks that were trading at 70 or 80 times earnings couldn't catch a bit. So then what you have is portfolio managers coming in and starting selling good stuff to raise money for their bad holdings. So, I mean, this could just be getting started, this party in the growth names. It could also be 1998. And maybe we're going to, you know, bounce back here. Maybe this is just another dip. But it's been significant enough and long enough now in some of this PE stuff like Zoom that you start thinking, I think, you know, that it's coming to roost. You know, Tesla, same story. I mean, you look at the company. Yeah, the story was awesome. We've been trading on story for a year, not caring anything about fundamentals. But at this point in time, we are starting to care about valuation. In the last 2 months, you can definitely see the rotation. We're starting to care about valuation and fundamentals. So this market is reconnecting with valuation. And you know what? Valuation matters to this market all of a sudden. And you know what? There's a lot of stocks still trading at ridiculous valuations. If you're in a stock that's trading 50 times sales, if you're in your DoorDashes and saying, well, the stock is cheap. It was $200. Now it's $129. I mean, is it cheap? Do your homework on your stocks. Crunch your numbers, because your CFA hat didn't matter 3 months ago. It sure as hell matters now. So yeah, people are going to say, well, what about GameStop? There's always going to be outliers. But, you know, GameStop will eventually come to roost too. So I think this is the market where you actually do some fundamental research. And you buy companies that are at reasonable prices. Like, look what I've been buying. Lockheed Martin.
That was a great call.
Everybody
there.
Laughs, you know, and say, Lockheed Martin. Who the hell wants to own Lockheed Martin? When I was buying it at 325 and or 330, I paid 330. But when I was buying that, and I took heat, it went all the way down to 320. I didn't get the bottom, but I was like, you know what? Reasonable valuation, dividend, space, you know, Kathy's, you know, we talked about Kathy's. This will be a segue into Kathy's ETF on.
Before you do that, before you do that, you brought up a term and two terms here. And if I don't know if you're day trading, you're swing trading or long-term investing, but if you're looking at a chart on something and you're saying it's oversold, it's got to bounce, or it's overbought. Those are two of the probably most misused terms on Wall Street, because something can stay overbought for a really long time and something can stay oversold. Yep. So look at, you got to have a hell of a lot better criteria than saying, it's oversold. Like, yeah, you can jump in Viacom here. It's oversold. Well, you know what? There are people that bought this in March.
It was oversold at 70.
Yeah, and it went to 100. So maybe we should ban that term from the show. Overbought, oversold. It's so nebulous. But go ahead. Let's go into.
I use it just because it's the timing of it. I'm waiting for that rip to sell. You know, selling on dips. So I'm like, when something's oversold, I'm looking for that rip to lighten up. And you know, every time we go up on the queues, every time we get that rip roaring rally like Friday night, I'm selling more growth names. You know, I'm selling more names because I have the barbell approach too. I mean, my barbells always lean more value. So my portfolio obviously doing very well with a lot of value names in it right now. But I've got some of those smaller growth names too. I had a little bit of those. And, you know, I lightened those up for the last month. You know, I've been talking about every day on the show. So, you know, I'm not hurting as bad as some people. But don't kid yourself. I still have a couple of those growth names. I still kept a small piece of the Fisker. That's been garbage. I have a couple other EV plays. Those have all been garbage. It's difficult to just come in here and say, okay, now is the time. It's going to turn. And if you've been trying to time the turn, you're not doing well. If you're doing the Kathy Wood style, though, she is just buying the growth in the high PE stuff continuously. She bought 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, about 25 names yesterday. They are all high PE. So she's all in. She's not going to change her investing style. She's growth at any cost. And it's hurting right now. It's hurting. And is it going to turn? It could. Like, I'm not saying, you know, that Kathy Wood's party is over. But if we are in April of 2000, where we've seen the top, but we don't know we've seen the top, because it didn't just happen suddenly. You know, we got to go back and look at history. If we have topped out in the high P stuff, and if people all of a sudden matter about valuation, can Teladoc continue to go lower? Absolutely. You know, look what they hit yesterday. They're starting to hit the growth names that they haven't hit yet. I mean, Penn Gaming had a terrible day yesterday. DraftKings, which has been holding up till 5 days ago, made a new high 6 days ago. Down from that high in 6 days.
People are out of money.
74 to 50. They're not out of money. They're not out of money. They're just rotating out of this stuff. They're starting to say, hey, you know, I'm not making any money. I mean, we used to just say, well, I'm going to buy this stock because I think Kathy Woods, if it's down significantly, Kathy Woods will come in and buy it. And then it'll get announced at night and it'll pop up the next day. Well, let's look at Kathy's buys from yesterday. DKNG. It's actually up. So DKNG is getting the Kathy pop. So I was about the first one to look at.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the day that it had yesterday.
Yeah, but that's up because of Kathy. Teladoc is down. So there is a few Kathy pops in here. U is down. Square doesn't care. Shop is down, doesn't care. Roku's up. Maybe that's with Kathy. I don't know if there's another news there. It's up $4. So she still have a little bit of influence in here. But when we were talking about Kathy Woods 2 months ago, she'd buy a stock and it popped 10%. You know, some of these smaller names, some of the smaller ones. So we're not seeing that now. And you know what else we're not seeing is you look at Jim Cramer and you look at Mad Money. He'd feature one of these SPACs, you know, on Mad Money. The SPAC would pop 20%. Think about the tweets, you know, I was tweeting back 6 months ago. This SPAC comes on, you know, and boom, it's popping 20% because it's being featured. And Jim Cramer says it's a buy. He pumped that BFT last night relentlessly. I mean, he is saying this is not like the other SPACs. This is a company. This is fully. Cramer was, and he may end up being right. Maybe this is going to be one that we want to own. But, you know, he was just relentlessly pumping it, and it's up 20 cents. I mean, that's telling you that people have been burned by growth, and they're staying away from those names right now. They're spooked. The market is spooked to just go and grab any SPAC right now. That's why the SPACs are really struggling. So, the question is, you know, how does this resolve itself? And I see one of two ways for the overall market. I see one of two ways. There's two ways this could happen. One is all these growth names start to bounce back and it carries the markets to new all-time highs. Or two, growth continues to leak like it did in April and May of 2000. By growth, I mean the higher PE stuff continues to leak. And then what happens is portfolio managers start selling everything else to raise cash. So, and then the whole market rolls over. So I don't know which scenario is going to come. You know, like I said, growth is overvalued for a long time and oversold right now. So we are due for a bounce and maybe we'll get another bounce. And maybe we're going to get taken up, you know, to S&P, you know, over 4,000 here, because why not? We've come this far. I kind of think the SPY could hit 4,000. It's definitely not a bear market in SPY, but there's a bear market in a lot of these growth names. So it's difficult to say what you do. I think you still take the approach. You have a little bit of growth. I like the value a lot more. I have a lot. I'm probably 75% value, maybe 80% value, 20% growth in my longer term portfolio. I was probably leaning a little bit more, like probably like 40% growth when we were really pumping, but definitely underperforming all the other growth names. So the question is, you know, how, you know, first of all, your own position. Do you have cash? I hope you do have some to, you know, spend on. But am I coming in here and buying Lockheed Martin now? You know, are you coming in here after, you know, it just run $40? No, I don't think so. I'm not chasing any of these names here because these ones could roll over too if, you know, the whole market rolls over. But I'd rather have my money in a Lockheed Martin right now than a Teladoc. So, but everything could turn quickly too. Just as we are right now, though, anything with growth is highly out of favor. And because the valuations were just ridiculous.
Q, Spencer.
I talked for a long time. I didn't realize that was me.
No, I didn't realize that was my cue. There was a couple of things I wanted to add, but then you kept going, and then I sort of forgot where I was going to jump in.
You got to take notes when Dennis is on air. So you know where to go back to. Yeah. We were going to do...
Nobody listens to me anymore.
It's not that no one listens. It's that I kept listening with me. If I had stopped listening, I would have. Oh, okay. This is what I wanted to add. But then you kept on going, and then I forgot what I wanted to add. So
you got to just interrupt them.
Yeah. We can go to Kathy, since I don't remember what I was going to say. We can just go to Kathy because we were just talking about that on the pre-market show. Maybe we'll get to the space thing in a little bit. But I'm more looking at the amended prospectus from Friday. We did not discuss this yesterday. They quietly, well, I mean, not quietly intentionally, but I mean, it's naturally quietly, I think, like this is naturally quite the thing to do. They amended their prospectus to say two things. They made two changes. One, they said now we are getting rid of the limit, whereas an ETF, one of our funds, can have a 30% weighting to a specific stock.
Oh,
and two, we are getting rid of the limit that said we cannot own more than 20% of a company's total outstanding shares.
She wants to go all in on Tesla.
And that shouldn't really be a surprise, because what has she been saying in recent weeks? She's said is, hey, if we get into a contraction, a period where growth is out of favor for a prolonged period of time, how are we going to survive that? We're going to consolidate. We're going to go more into the names we believe in, and we're going to cut the crap. We're going to cut the dead weight, right? Man. That's basically what she said, is we're going to consolidate into the strongest positions. So they can't really do that with a 30% limit on any fund weighting and a 20% limit on owning any one company's outstanding shares. So that being said, I should note that they are currently nowhere near having 30% of any one fund.
Why would you want to disclose? I mean, even if
she wants to be able to do that, whatever she wants.
Well, they have to.
Jesus, Murphy. Okay, let's tell everyone.
They have to, and props to somebody for noticing that.
Whoever
it was that noticed that. But I should add that, so they amended the rule saying, so now we are allowed to allocate more than one fund, more than one position to 30% of our fund. But they're not anywhere close to that. Currently, the largest holding in any of their funds is about 10%, right?
The Tesla?
It's Tesla. ARKK has about 10% on Tesla. ARKW has 10% on Tesla. ARKF has 10% of Square. And ARKQ is 10% on Tesla. So they are anywhere close to the 30% bogey.
If it's going gets tough, she wants to be able to go all in on Tesla. I mean, one, she obviously is starting to say, I'm not going to diversify as much here because I'm getting slammed in all this small crap that I keep buying.
Right.
Which she is. And then, two is just, she really believes in Tesla. She said, what's her price target, her new price target?
She gave a few, right?
$4,000. Her bearish price target's like $2,000. She's so much a believer in Tesla that is this good for Tesla? Is it, this is under the radar here, but if she's just going to start buying the stock hand over fist.
3,000, I guess, was like the main.
Maybe she can push it up too. I don't know. We had the Kathy push already, and the market laughed at it, obviously.
When that was $100 target. Ago.
Yeah, when it was 660 and went to 700 because she said it was going to 4,000 with that day to 700, and then it just went straight down since then. It's scary. I mean, this is, against everything that I've learned in trading, that one, I like to stay diversified. I like to control risk. But if you're just going all in on growth and you're going all in on, what you believe in.
You probably shouldn't be all in on growth. Is that, I think, the point?
Well, she is all in on growth, though.
No. But if she just runs a fund as an investor, you probably shouldn't be all in on growth, right? Like, and like Kathy's filings, they say that, right? Like, these are growth funds. We are.
Yeah, she has to stay growth because she's a growth investor.
We have concentration risk, right?
Yeah.
If you own 100% of your net worth into growth ETFs like ARK or similar, that might not be the best thing to do. So let Kathy be a slice. Don't let Kathy be the whole thing.
Another thing weighing on this market too, and I know I've kind of been poo-pooing this, but that 10-year yield keeps like creeping up, 1.6, 1.7, and I've always said, why are people gonna pull their money out of the stock market, to get 1.6, 1.7, 1.8? Well, when you got the market going down, going down 5-10%, maybe those 10-year treasury, maybe 1.6, 1.7. I don't know what it's going to take to do a huge re-asset allocation, maybe 2%. But that, and also like the whole street, everybody except Jerome Powell's convinced that, rates are going up and we have rampant inflation, which can be a two-edged sword for stocks. But you got to keep an eye on that. Interest rates, they're moving up, and that is competition for the equities markets.
Yeah, it's competition, but I think the rates are still so low. I'm not that concerned about that. I'm just concerned.
Neither am I.
I'm more concerned that, you know, paying 70 times sales or 50 times sales, not 50 times earnings, 50 times sales for companies like Zoom. I mean, it carried so much on the story. Everybody's the hype. And we were saying story that all that is all that matters. You know, you had, you know, obviously Citron, Andrew left on our show saying story is all that matters. It was. This was the market we were in 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago, even 2 years ago. We're not in that market. We're not in Kansas anymore. And you know what? Story is cool. And story might carry a stock for a day, but it's not carrying the stocks like it used to. It's not, you know, like you get Cramer featuring a stock for the first time. People are hearing about it for the first time. It's not popping like it used to. And that's because everybody's telling their story in social media. And they're telling the stories everywhere. We got story overload. I mean, there's just story overload on a lot of these stocks, and people are back down to the roots, the grassroots, where you have fundamental analysis that actually starts to matter. So I just cannot fathom paying some of these prices for some of these stocks. So
Dennis, that's arguably a good thing, because
I think it's a fantastic thing. I love this.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic thing, because the markets need it. It makes me more confident that the process works.
Yeah.
It's been so long that I did my CFA. You know, I've been like taking my CFA hat and throwing it out here for the last year because it hasn't mattered. I'm like, I can't think about valuation. I just got to think about story, because that is what drives price right now. That's not the way it is anymore. I mean, you look at DoorDash. The story was cool. Yeah, they deliver. But we've talked about this, and we're like, well, how long is it before one, competition comes, and two, how can they sustain those margins? And three, are they even making money? So when the stock goes from 220 to 129, it's deserved. It was deserved. And you know what? If it falls in half again from here, it's probably deserved. You know, it's nothing wrong with the company. The company's done everything right. It's wrong with the investors that they were paying ridiculous prices for companies that were never going to be able to meet those higher expectations. I mean, Airbnb might be the same thing, although I do love Airbnb's business. And I do believe this is a game changer for the hotel industry. And this is why I hate the hotel stocks. I absolutely, Hilton, Marriott, the runs that these companies have had, this is ridiculous in itself. For Hilton to be trading at new all-time highs when we still have a pandemic and we still have Airbnb eating their lunch,
that's a good
is point. Ridiculous. So, you know, Airbnb, I like a lot better than a DoorDash. It's still a crazy valuation. I can't pay it, but I can get behind that. I think Airbnb is a real disruptor. I think there's going to be a lot less people. You know, there's only less business travel for I going forward, but there's less people. When I go on vacation now, we look for an Airbnb. We don't look for hotels.
Yeah, we look at one.
It's cool. Yeah.
Yep.
Why is Hilton at all-time highs? If I was in Hilton, just my opinion, if I was in Hilton, I would be selling it as fast as I possibly could. I think Hilton at 119 is insanity. This is higher than it was before the pandemic started, and they still have Airbnb eating their lunch. Marriott, same story. All these hotels, because we're all in on the reopening trade. Everybody's going to flock to hotels.
Cases in Michigan are just going through the roof. I don't know about the
Airbnb.
Other...
Well, real estate, Airbnb, but I mean, is the hotels full? The hotels and maybe they're going to be. We're going to run.
I'm talking about COVID cases are going through the roof.
Oh, well, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, we won't even go into that.
But, I mean, there's other things to worry about. We haven't talked about COVID on this show for a long time. The variant, you know, if the reopening trade fails, that's going to be ugly for everyone. I don't want that to happen. I want to get back to normal. I want to be out of here. So I don't want to talk about that scenario there. All I'm talking about is a scenario where prices are stupid. And prices got stupid in so many of these higher growth names. But prices are also stupid, I believe, in some of the names that don't have super high PEs. Hilton's PE is probably not crazy. I just don't see it as like this business that's just going to take off. We might get a little lift from the reopening, but Airbnb is still there. And Airbnb is still kicking ass and taking names.
So again, just to sum up this entire thing, it's one, maybe have some cash. And two, you should be rooting for a pullback in the companies that you like, not the ones that, you know, in the disruptors, in the ones that have a future, not the ones that like higher valuation, like story stock, if you still like Airbnb is a high valuation story stock, so you should be rooting for a pullback in that more so than you should be rooting for a pullback in TripAdvisor or Hyatt, Hilton, Marriott, et cetera, Darden restaurants I just see in chat, right? Another one, right? That's how I would approach this. I never bought Airbnb, and I'm pissed off, and I wish I had. So I am rooting for a pullback.
Airbnb. I think you're going to get another shot.
I would gladly scoop up some Airbnb shares.
Those names, like I feel like an Airbnb is one that I would scoop up if it went significant pullback to. You're not going to get it at like, you know, a P at 30 or 40. And they don't make, I don't even know if they make money here yet.
They don't.
You can project it out though. I feel like an Airbnb is like one of the growth names that could be like an Amazon, you know, like it's thrown out. Maybe we really get ugly. Maybe we don't. Maybe we just start rallying from here. But I don't want to pay $182. But if Airbnb came down to like $100, you know, if it got ugly, scenario analysis, not saying it's going to happen because somebody will go say something. Oh, Dennis said Airbnb is going $100. I don't know where it's going, but I'm saying if it got down there or even back to the 120 where it kissed back, you know, back in December, that's the kind of stock that I would buy because I believe in that company and I believe it is a game changer for the entire hotel industry and not in a good way for hotels. So that's why I hate hotel stocks.
But to
I
be hated clear, hotel stocks
before the pandemic,
yeah,
they might get full. These hotels might fill up and they probably are going to fill up right now. And everybody's like, oh, the hotels are filling up. That's good news. But you're already paying an all-time highs for them and they're not full right now. So you're already speculating that they are going to fill up.
So in this specific instance, Dennis is talking about Airbnb, but that's a proxy. It could be anything, right? It could be anything. So how would you approach that? Whether it's Airbnb or insert other stock like in Snowflake or insert growth stock that you like that's a little bit pricey right now. How would you approach that?
I don't know. I'm arguing with somebody on Disney because they're saying everybody likes to call out all my bad calls. Yes, I was bearish Disney at 120. Yes, very much so. I didn't understand. This was back going to March and April and May, and I didn't understand why Disney was holding up as well because the parks were closed. But if you remember correctly, 6 months ago, I turned bullish at 130 because I said that the day the vaccine came out, I was bullish Disney, and I was so upset that I didn't get it long, and I was trying to buy it. I had orders out there to buy it at 130, and the vaccine day when it gapped up back in November. It was November.
November 9th.
It gapped to 147, and I was hoping it would pull back to get it because, one, I do believe in Disney long term. You know, Disney isn't going to be, you know, maybe some of the hotels, but for the Disney just does everything right. So if we were going to reopen, if we were going to full reopening, I wanted to be long Disney. Am I buying at 184? No. Disney comes back to 160, I will buy it. So, I mean, when you tell a story to everybody in the chat and say, Dennis has been bearish Disney at 120, sure. You know, back in July, August, definitely, I didn't get it. But, you know, once the day they said the vaccine is coming out, everything changed. Now, what did I, you know, I was saying that day, you know, like not that day. There was 4 days later where we pulled back. Remember, Joel, we pulled back.
Yeah, I got the chart.
And I bought Norwegian Cruise Lines and I bought Wynn and I bought, you know, and you could go back and listen to the show. I didn't buy it on the day we gapped up. I waited for the pullback. I bought American Airlines and I bought all these. I couldn't believe what my portfolio looked like with all these reopening stocks. And I was like, I hope this vaccine works or I'm going to get crushed. And I've sold out a lot of those names because, you know me, I sell too soon. But Disney too. I would have loved to have Disney then too. So I turned bullish the day that, you know, we had the vaccine announcement back in November. So, now these stocks have run so far. I mean, but then you look and actually some of them started to come off again too. So, you know, is there a buy on some of these at some point in time? Maybe. The whole point is just don't chase stocks and don't think you're not going to get another chance. This is not the environment. You need to chase your stock.
So again, I'll re-ask my question. Assuming you have a list of names that you like, whether it's Airbnb or not, could be whoever, how would you approach that going forward? You would just wait for a pullback?
Well, you can sit down and crunch the numbers, you know, do projections. My buddy Chris Banier does this. He's an excellent trader, excellent investor. Chris sometimes listens to the show. I'll give you a shout out there. But, you know, you're never going to hear of this guy. But this guy just quietly makes a lot of money in the background. And he tries to buy growth at a reasonable price, too. He figures it out, you know, and he's looking at, you know, okay, well, if it's growing at this rate, just doing the simple math, and it continues to grow at this rate, you know, how much money could this potentially make? And is it reasonable enough to pay the current valuation? I've not done that math on Airbnb. I'll probably give Chris a call because he probably already did it. So why do I need to reinvent the wheel? Let's let you know what it was, what's the math that you're showing on Airbnb, because he crunches it on all the big companies. And is it reasonable? You know, he was the one that, you know, when Apple started taking off 7 years ago, we should bring Chris on the show, but when it started taking off, when did Apple really start taking off? Like 7 or 8 years ago? It was in the gutter for a long time.
Well,
but people were saying, oh, you can't pay. And he was just projecting it out. And he's like, you know, when he got bullish was when they came out, not even with the iPhone. So it's all along, going along. It was after iTunes when they came out with,
It was the iPhone.
He was bullish before that when they came out with that. What was the product before the iPhone?
The iPod.
Yeah, the iPod that had all the pictures.
Like the iTouch.
The iTouch screen. Yeah, okay. He's like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. He went out and bought one that day, and he was playing with it and showing it to me. This was like when the iTouch. He like was like one of the first people to buy it. He's like, this is the coolest thing ever. He's like, this thing. This was before the iPhone, and he's like, he was just loaded up on Apple. Like as much like calls, everything, like all in on Apple. And you know what? He probably made his entire life off that. I don't know how much money he made on it, but he probably made his entire life on that. But just, you know, that's the idea is, you know, you find the product and you're like, okay, well, this is, you know, the future. It really is. And you really believe in it, but don't pay ridiculous prices for it either. So he's crunching numbers and saying, you know, they could eventually get to this and then they'd be making a lot of money. And we're talking when Apple's probably on a split adjusted basis at about $5. So now you're looking at an Apple 126, you know, and he was the same thing with MasterCard. He gave me MasterCard back in 2010, just doing projections and saying, you know, this company can make this. My average cost basis, I bought it just off of Chris's recommendation. So thank you, Chris. My average cost basis on MasterCard is $11. It's 362. I'm averaging at $11. So, I mean, long-term investing on good companies can work, but you got to have, you know, reason for it. So you got to do the numbers on Airbnb and can it get to that level where the valuation makes sense. If it can't, you don't touch it. If it can, you do. So we didn't have to do any of this stuff in the last year because valuation hasn't mattered. I'm telling you, you got to do this homework now because valuation going forward is likely to continue to matter.
Do we want to do the Kathy ETF before we bring on Joel?
Oh yeah, let's do it quickly here. I'll bring on my screen. You can see if you didn't see it by now, there are the holdings as of this is as of today, I guess, as the fund is going live today. So I saw some couple things online, speculations that these are just placeholders because they know that there's no cash in this fund. So some of these are going to change. People think, I don't know. We'll find out when it launches. But a couple of weird things. Obviously, there's a lot of e-commerce in here, which is strange. JD's in here. Alibaba's in here. Amazon's in here. Netflix is in here. That's weird.
And the space fund.
I'll get there. John Deere is in here, which is strange. Workhorse is in here. And then the creme de la creme for the weirdness, if it's not Netflix, it's number two right there, PRNT. The number two holding in the fund is their own passive 3D printing fund, which is strange. So a bit of arcception happening within the ARK universe here, an ARK within an ARK.
Did she release this? This is what she released?
This is what they released. Okay.
So these holdings are so small. Like, I'm looking at – something's not right, though. Something's not right here because you look, okay, she's got 52 shares of Google, but that's $106,000. She's got 300 shares of Deere. It's 300. I guess we are at that point in time. I guess Deere is $364. But anyways, so she's going to load. So is she going to be buying in these weights going forward? Like, this is a small amount of money. So you're not talking a big amount of money here.
Right.
So when she's only got 300 shares or 52 shares of Google, so maybe these weights are going to change significantly. So are we going to see a huge buys in all these stocks today when this goes live?
I'm not totally clear on how the fund launch process works. Maybe Joel Kalina knows, maybe not. But they, you know, funds launch with money. It's not like they launch with nothing. They already They already have assets, so they would have had to already go and buy. Is how I understand it. But again, I'm not an expert in the fund launching process. I think it was not so much playing that they would have had to already buy or that they're going to buy. It's, hey, they're going to, like, in the future, they're going to keep buying, right? Like this is, it's basically like a Kathy endorsement or not, like in the case of Maxar, right? MAXR, which is not on this list. It's like,
yeah, that's a weird one not to be there.
It's like an endorsement or it's not. It's how I think that the market sees it. It's not, they're not looking at this, oh, like trying to front run or chase Kathy. It's like, oh, Kathy believes in this. Oh, Kathy doesn't believe in this. It's kind of,
I'm gonna steal one from Vegas here. Is Spacely Sprockets on the list?
What?
Nah, you guys are too young to know what that is.
Sorry. Sorry, Joel.
Spacely Sprockets, Flintstones, Mr. Spacely.
Mr. Spacely, I wouldn't know.
Was that Jetsons? Jetsons.
Jetsons.
Which one was it?
Jetsons. It's got to be Jetsons. There wasn't space in the Flintstones.
Yeah, what am I thinking, Flintstones?
Prehistoric. I'm thinking about
Mr. Slick.
Come on.
Yeah.
And the dog Astro.
Let's bring on Joel Kalina on, head of technology and media trading at Wedbush Securities. Joel.
You messed it up.
What's up, Joel? Other Joel. Hey,
good morning, guys.
Do you have anything to add on the Flintstones Jetsons snafu?
That's an error by Joel. It's 100% Jetsons. He did correct himself.
I love the Flintstones, though. I love Barney Rubble. Go ahead.
So yeah, that was definitely Jetsons, and a fitting way to with the Kathy Wood Space ETF. As you said, the sizes look extremely small in terms of how much money is being at least implemented to kick off this ETF. But I mean, baffling to say the least. And had a lot of comical conversations with some of my clients yesterday, as you guys just kind of ran through some of the holdings of this, and it's baffling to say the least. And this kind of adds another bizarre element to the Kathy Wood story. Clearly she was a superstar going back 18 to 24 months, and it's unraveling a little bit. She was a hero on momentum, disruptive tech, and clearly the market has been telling us a completely different story over the past 3 to 4 months.
We didn't really go into it, but what about some of these holdings? I mean, she's got Deer in the space ETF. I'm trying to put it together. I guess there's going to be farming on Mars maybe one day. Is this where I she's really thinking outside the box here? And I don't understand why we need tractors in space.
Potentially, then Netflix, right? Netflix has a few movies about outer space, so maybe.
there's a connection there. Yeah, Jimmy, the Jetsons on Netflix.
No, but I have a serious question, Joel. We know to the small size in some of these positions. Is that a reflection of the assets that ARK has raised for the fund's launch?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure. And I'm definitely not, I can't, say I'm very well read on her process as well. And okay. When she initially launches an ETF within her suite. So I can't kind of speak to that, but it seems like those are the horses she's going with in the near term. And kind of she'll continue to kind of back those names and probably adjust as maybe, new kind of names, become public or whatnot. But that's kind of just seems like the starting point.
What do you make of the ARKception thing, the print 3D printing? Like, Netflix is whatever, we can all make fun of that, but I'm sure you can make an argument for anything, right? But the 3D printing thing, the ARK fund within the ARK fund, what do you make of that?
I mean, that's the thing. It's all of this is very baffling. And like I said, I probably that name and that holding specifically came up, probably two or three times in a couple of conversations yesterday. And people are trying to figure out what is actually her strategy moving forward. I mean, we clearly her family of ETFs has seen outflows in over the past kind of several months, and the ongoing takeaway has just been a lot of head scratching, right? Like she's selling her large mega cap names, the higher quality names, the Taiwan Semis, Alphabet, NXPIs, to kind of buy more, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Teladoc, the Squares, the Tesla, the Bitcoin, the Zooms. I mean, these are broken charts. I mean, Zoom is beyond broke. A great story stock from 2020. It's just not going to work in 2021. And we still have 3 quarters left. I just don't see, and we're yet to even face the massive comps from COVID.
No way they're going to meet those comps. It's going to be impossible comparisons from everyone was signing up for Zoom, a year ago.
Yeah, but the market knows that, doesn't it? I mean, we're not that.
Yeah, that's why they're taking it down.
Yeah, and that's why every rally gets sold. Almost, rallies are becoming a lot more shorter lived than ever before in a lot of her stocks. And again, look at the 10-year again. We touched 177 earlier this morning. You have Biden making his big spending speech tomorrow. So that's obviously, putting upward pressure on yields once again overnight. There's just really no appetite for any of these stocks, which honestly makes me think we're getting close. You can start dipping your toes into the higher quality names. You guys mentioned Snowflake earlier in the show. I think you can look for good management teams, high quality businesses. But man, like you look at names like Unity or AI. Tom Seibel, is recently launched IPO. The stock was, I think it debuted at 100 times sales, hit almost 100, $200, and now is trading in the 60s. It's amazing the lack of a bid towards any of these names, which does make me think we are probably getting close to the bottom for some of them. But the story stocks, the Pelotons, the Zooms, you know, these names just massively outperformed in 20. I don't think you, I wouldn't touch these with a 10-foot pole. Not right now. Unless the tape tells us something differently, I'd rather buy them when the momentum starts going the other way.
Joel,
go ahead.
No, you go. Go for
it. We're on the line with Joel Kalina, head of trading, media trading with Wedbush Technologies. What a day to have you on. Let's talk about the fallout in Viacom and Discovery and that sector. I know you were sending notes around earlier in the week. I mean, are these Saints just going to bounce right back? Is this like, Viacom, $100 last week, 2-for-1 stock split. Are these Saints going to settle in and go back up, or is the story over? And just get your take on these block trades, these institutional trades, when they're going through, the preparation that the house is doing in front of those trades.
Well, I mean, clearly the prime brokers of the family office, of Billy Wang, just talk about, lack of risk management, to say the least. And I know the brokers got together, last week, and there was a few that were ahead of the curve. Goldman and Morgan Stanley, it looks like they were selling these blocks of stock during their conference call with the other brokers. I mean, their losses are reported to be very minimal. And then here you go, Credit Suisse staring at a $7 billion loss, wiping out 2 years of profit. Nomura is staring at a massive loss. Deutsche as well. I thought they got out of the equities game and even prime brokerage services a little bit. And Deutsche is going to take a hit as well. I mean, this is bizarre. I mean, obviously, it really mirrors what we kind of saw in 2007 on kind of the subprime side of things. It's just kind of scary how this is really the second kind of catastrophic event. I say that with, obviously, it's not a natural disaster by any means. But a second big blow up within the finance community about, hedge funds that have gotten too levered up and concentrated positions and crowded positions as well. And when things go wrong, there's no way to get out. And I think Viacom, the trigger for Viacom was clearly the $3 billion share offering that was announced last week. And there's only one good trader, of this whole thing. And it's been the CFO of Viacom. Fair play to him. The stock was definitely at a level where it shouldn't have been from fundamentals, and he took advantage of it and sold $3 billion worth of stock around $85.
Joel, don't you feel a little vindicated? Because I was reading your notes all the way up, and you were just as baffled as me. Like, no one understands why Viacom and Discovery and even Fox are going up, and we don't get it.
Yeah,
and now we get it.
Exactly. Now we get it. And sometimes it's after the fact. I mean, I heard of a lot of conversations over the past month, and I was calling up guys, some at the larger kind of mutual funds and really just kind of understand what is going on. What are you seeing? And really people mostly thought it was due to passive inflows and just kind of or big sector, more rotation driven, right? With, into value out of growth.
Well,
and because everyone knew Discovery and Viacom both held their separate streaming events. And they're not revolutionary. They're not going to be game changers by any means.
Right.
So to see these stocks go from 30 to 40 to 50, then, obviously then the big gap up. Now we know why. So are these stocks going to go higher from here? I don't know. I wouldn't touch them because you still look at the streaming landscape. You have Disney and Netflix, hands down the top two. And there's going to be so many players at the bottom, which you're going to think their services are going to continue to face significant churn on a quarterly basis as people flip-flop between Paramount Plus or Discovery or HBO Max, but everyone's going to have the Disney Plus and Netflix in their family kind of rotation. And the others are just going to be, at the mercy of whatever, the sentiment is that given month for a household. So I don't see them as real players. I'm still pretty negative on old media. And again, a lot of people were wrong, but at least the shorts finally got a little bit of a get out of jail free card here with the pullback in Viacom.
All right, a couple more quick things for you. As far as this global semiconductor shortage, can you real quickly tell us who is sort of like at ground zero of this? What would be the best way to play that?
Yeah, I mean, the bulk of the issues have been in the automotive industry, which everyone knows by now. It still feels like on a daily basis, you have one auto OEM coming out and talking about a plant stoppage for 1 or 2 weeks. And then you had a plant fire at one of the world's, I think, number 2 or 3 auto supplier, Renesas out of Japan. So that's kind of adding, more kind of headaches to it. Yeah, Texas weather disruption in February, which kind of knocked off, fabs for Samsung, NXPI, and Infineon. So the automotive sector has just gotten crunched. You had NIO was the first Chinese kind of EV play to come out, and kind of highlight these shortages are going to impact their production. So that's kind of an issue there. They have Foxconn this morning. I haven't read too much about it. We're trying to get some more checks from the ground. So Foxconn, obviously a huge supplier to Apple, they're out there warning, saying that these shortages are going to impact a lot more than just automotive. They could linger down to the, you know, through smartphones, through PC chain. So that's something to keep an eye on to me, for me. But one thing I do know is that, you know, continued supply tightness, it bodes well for pricing and it bodes well for margins. So whether it's, you know, the PC makers all had a big move overnight. So it's going to benefit, you know, really the names like Infineon, Texas Instruments, and really who I love as a semi trade. I mean, it's a very simple, straightforward thesis, the semi equipment players. And this follows, you know, Intel's big kind of CapEx plans announced last week. They're the arms dealers for the global race for dominance in AI and 5G. You can see continued, you know, migration to more advanced nodes from 5 nanometer. Taiwan Semi is going to 4 and 3 nanometer, increasing chip complexity, lifting 5G handset builds. To me, semi equipment is where you want to be. And especially as Intel, you know, I don't know if I'd, you know, buy Intel here because I still think it's an execution story, but you know, you can invest in Applied Materials and get paid that way and see if Intel actually succeeds. You know, because AMAT will make money regardless if Intel becomes a real foundry player or not.
All right, I just had to put down my thesaurus there when you were talking about the chip stocks, but I just, before we let you go, I mean, if you just tuned into this show, you were listening to us at the top of the show, you'd be like, man, these guys are the biggest bears on Wall Street. And not so much you, Joel, but, you know, they're talking about risk in the market. And here we are sitting 30, you know, new all-time closing high a few days ago, 30 points off the all-time high. Who cares about, you know, the 10-year yield? I mean, what, you know, we're hanging up here and the path of least resistance is still higher. Do you see any other event? I mean, you had the Suez Canal blockage. Do you see, you know, anything that, like, another catalyst, something that, or is it just going to be this kind of grinding higher effect until we have some kind of catastrophe?
Can I go out on a limb, like real conspiracy theorist a little bit, which is,
yes, this is the pre-market show. Come on, Joel.
It's gaining a lot more attention in the press. And so you can Google it and pick up some articles. I think the FT had a very good article yesterday or Sunday about how there's increasing concern that China may really strong arm their way into Taiwan. There's been a couple conflicts in terms of, you know, their air forces. That's something to keep an eye on. And from what I'm reading, that's increasing concern from not just the US, but from Japan about a conflict truly breaking out. We all know that China has been very vocal about, you know, becoming more advanced and more of a dominant player in terms of global technology leadership. Well, where are all the fabs sitting? You know, Taiwan Semi, the world's probably, you know, the best chip manufacturer on planet Earth, is sitting in Taiwan. And then you also have, you know, United Micro, you know, UMC as well. I mean, not too far away, they could really make one major land grab and become a dominant tech player. But obviously, it would turn the world upside down in terms of a geopolitical event. So that's one thing to keep an eye on. That's out there a little bit. But you're right. The VIX at 21 feels really off. S&P just off the highs feels off. Something's going on here. And maybe it's just been the rotation into the large caps. Look at tech, right? Alphabet's been a big alpha performer year to date. Facebook's been acting great. You know, Amazon and Apple have had decent haircuts off their highs, but have been holding in relatively well within tech, given the pullbacks. And maybe that's what's supporting the indices. So if that large cap, you know, bid kind of dissipates, I think that could be the risk to the indices. But that's, again, another thing that comes up in conversations is how the market's held in as well they've had, despite all these kind of bizarro headlines that continue to hit, which seems like now every 2 to 3 weeks here in 2021.
All right, Joel Kalina is the head of technology and media trading at Wedbush Securities. Joel, always appreciate your time. Thanks a lot, sir.
No, thanks, Paul. Yeah, it's been a long time. We'll get you back on again real soon. That was excellent content.
I love it. All right, guys. Take care.
All right. 8:51 here. Got about 9 minutes before the top of the hour. I want to hit on PayPal quickly. They had actually 2 days in a row now. We've got some like real world crypto news. The other day was Visa, or that may have been Friday now. I don't remember. Anyway, PayPal this morning announced that they're going to allow customers in the U.S. to buy stuff
from online businesses using crypto. And it's a pilot program that's going to start in the coming months. And then you can convert those crypto holdings into U.S. dollars or some sort of other currency at checkout. So a pilot crypto program from PayPal talking about the practical uses of Bitcoin. This is one of them.
Cool headline if it was 3 months ago. Nothing burger in this market because we're not that excited about these headlines here now. This chart, not that we're going to get all patterny with you, but this is a head and shoulders if I've ever seen a head and shoulders, Joel. Look at the left shoulder from December and January, the head up in February. The right shoulder is perfectly formed here in March. This thing loses the neckline, which is We could call it 220. This thing loses 220. This thing could be 180. So it's holding up. That's the good news. You need it to continue to hold up. Even the 227 low. If I was long this thing right now, I wouldn't want to take out the 227 low from 3 days ago. That would be my bogey. So I see it up here at $1.43 on the exciting headline about the Bitcoin. I just don't think there's a lot of people that are that interested in this headline. Yeah. I would be surprised this gives it back.
225 was your low in January. 223 appears that. So this is called 224. Under that, your next monthly low is 206.65. We see a lot of monthly charts like this, but they could always do what Tesla's doing, and that's buy one and then pay for one more.
Just double charge.
Well, we didn't even talk about that on the show. I mean, how does this occur? So give us what happened, Spencer, and then we can try to possibly come up with some scenario where this is allowed to happen.
I mean, that's basically it, right? CNBC found some people who apparently had been charged twice by Tesla for the same car.
Yeah, so I think it was that they obviously authorized, they took the money out of the account. But then a few days later, they took the money out of the account again. So they took it twice. So I don't know if this is just a deposit or what it is. But anyway, some people apparently paid twice for their Tesla. So, like you were saying, Mitch, this is a technology company. Well, they're not being very technically savvy here. So I don't know. This is just that's a pure disaster.
Let's think about this logically. If you're Tesla and how do you get these bookings? How do you actually? I mean, come on now.
You're saying they do this? No, we're just joking. They didn't do it intentionally. It's a screw up. I mean, it's a screw up. But there's been a few screw ups here and there. The story has continued to carry the stock, though. The thing is just so bloody tired, though. I mean, we're 598 here now. It looks like inevitably it wants to retest the 539 low from the beginning of March. And obviously, there's going to be some support there. So we'll see what it does there. It looks to me like it wants to lose 600. Looks like it wants to lose it today. We'll see what happens with the overall market. I mean, if we start to go all hungry for growth, this will be the stock that leads the charge back. Is there going to be Kathy buying this hand over fist now that she's allowed to buy more of it, apparently? With her, the way she's changed her wording in her prospectuses, maybe. But if you're relying just on Kathy Woods in this story, it's tough. So there's been a lot of easy money made in Tesla. That easy money is not being made anymore. The trend is still your friend, though. It's held up a lot better than a lot of other growth names.
That monthly low that we touched, that 540, I talked about that before. That was also your low back in December. That is, S&P ad, people that bought it after the split. I mean, if that's not a clear, you mentioned 400, but look at that 540. I mean, that's 50 bucks away. And even, like you said, even on these pops, I mean, that thing has been getting sold. So we'll, but they're buying a lot of Bitcoin. So maybe that's going to help them out. Didn't he buy another bunch of big chunk of Bitcoin for the company?
I don't know about that, but can I tell you the best nugget in the CNBC story? The best nugget was that they're talking to this one guy, and he said, yeah, Tesla told me they're going to come and deliver my car between 9 a.m. and midnight.
Well,
talk about a window.
We got the right day.
Yeah, we see your five-hour window, Comcast, and we raise you the whole day, 9 a.m. and midnight. Jesus. Anyway, I just thought that was hilarious.
And everybody just talks, and obviously, I've never understood the valuation there, but The cars are cool, but they're not flashy. I mean, it's not like when I looked at, you know, my buddies, and I don't know which one. He's got the model. What's the different models that he's got?
There's the S, the 3, the X, and the Y.
He's got this one souped up, like the S, I think it is, or maybe it's a 3. Yeah. Anyways,
the 3 is souped up.
There's not much in there, you know, like inside the cars, like in the dash and stuff. It's like, it looks like it's got an iPad there, like sitting there. And is that what Raz is like? Is Raz around? We should get Raz sometime. But, you know, when you're in there, Joel, it looks like it's got the iPad, you know, for the dashboard kind of. And I'm like in the car, and he paid like $81,000 for this car. And I'm like, it is super fast. Like when you're driving it, like, wow, this thing's awesome, you know, to drive.
How many kilometers does it go?
How many kilometers?
How fast in kilometers?
Go 0 to 60, so 0 to 60 miles an hour in 3.1 seconds.
Okay.
So I mean, the thing is phenomenally fast. You know, it felt like he hit it, and it felt like a rocket ship. Like, I mean, I was really impressed with that. But it's looking. I kind of expected more when I was in it. Like I was expecting more flash, and it was kind of plain. And you know, maybe that's what it. You know, but when you're buying an $80,000 car, that's a lot of money. I mean, this is Canada, right? So 60,000 or 65,000 US. When you're buying that and spending that kind of money, you want some flash. But I know how everybody's been so impressed with the cars. I don't know. I wasn't as impressed. But that's not to say, you know, nothing about, you know, I'm still impressed with the technology. And obviously, you know, they're leading the front in EV. And I still believe Tesla's going to be the leader, one of the leaders in EV. I just can't wrap my head around the valuation. That's why I'm on the stock. Next.
Sorry, I had to make a quick phone call for our next guest.
No. I'm making phone calls during my segment.
He's the phone screener. He's the producer.
And he does it all. Spencer does
it all.
Wait.
No, I wanted to add, we talked about PayPal. You know what chart looks identical to PayPal? Is this Activision chart. And their CEO announced he's leaving suddenly. And that Activision chart looks identical. Talk about head and shoulders. APVI looks identical to PayPal, I thought.
I'd sell it. I'd sell it too. I already did sell it. I shouldn't say I'd sell it. I already did sell it. I took the Michael Pachter run. He said it was a double at 50. It did. It doubled. Michael Pachter win. Out. So I the gaming stocks are still good, but you're right. I don't like the chart there. 95 major resistance. It's getting a little lift here this morning. I think it's an opportunity to get out. The only game I still take two. I held on to that one. And I still have Zynga. Those are the two gaming stocks. I still like gaming going forward. And the Zynga doesn't look as great as it did once. And, you know, it's been cricket since the Glue Mobile acquisition. Maybe we're not in this huge M&A environment here. I don't know. I'm torn on the Zynga. It's right where I bought it. The chart doesn't look good here. There's so many head and shoulders. Man, I don't even like pattern trading. I don't really even like technicals, to be honest with you, that much. But, man, all these head and shoulders are, like, foreshadowing something here, Joel.
I don't know. I don't want to make too many comments on that.
I don't know either. I'm still in Zynga. I'm still in Take Two. I still want some exposure. You got to have some exposure to where you feel like, you know, there's some growth still. I still think e-gaming, you know, the esports. I still want some exposure to the stuff, but I'm not all in on growth. I'm not all in on story right now. I'm all in on cash. That's kind of where I'm sitting.
Story, a lot of these.
Mitch, we haven't seen you in so long. My dad says, he misses you, man.
My dad.
He used to come on more on our show, and now he's got to go watch you on SPAX Attack. He doesn't come on our show. He's like, where is Mitch? I'm like, we got to watch SPAX Attack more at 11. Because my dad says he misses you.
Much love out there. Much love for sure. One chart that I wanted to take a look at, and it's something that I've seen pulled back massively, is Zillow.
That's interesting.
So it's down to 119. It had a high 208. So it's kind of interesting. It's almost back down almost 50% from the highs.
Yeah.
Quickly. You know what? Just Gene loves
this
stock. Maybe
thrown out the bathwater here.
Yeah. Gene loves this stock. He thinks that this is the future. So keep an eye on that. But
I haven't done the numbers on this either. So, you know, obviously I don't see any earnings at all. So, you know, you can't just quick grab a PE type deal. You got to look at growth and, you know, maybe there's some projected earnings here. Do you have earnings going forward? I know it's a $30 billion company still, which is something to consider. I like the story too. I've always liked the story in Zillow. So I just never wrap my head around the valuation, but maybe it gets to a point here where you can wrap your head around the valuation. I think that's what, you know, and Mitch, I think that's a good point. Just, you know, you got these storied stocks, and story still matters, but you got to get the story at a reasonable price. So if you can come in and find your storied stock now at a reasonable price, maybe you do start nibbling in on some of the growth names. If they got the growth and it's a reasonable price. I mean, that's why Facebook, you know, has still, you know, been
at all-time
highs.
Yep.
And we talk, it's in Google, same thing. I mean, Google gets an upgrade today. Full disclosure, I'm long Google, all in on Google. You know, you look at this and you're like, okay, well, the thing's trading 20 times forward earnings. It's got growth. They still are an awesome company here. And, you know, Facebook's, you know, maybe, you know, the legacy isn't as good, but they got so much other things with the Instagram and so many other businesses here. I mean, there is still growth at a reasonable price out there. Maybe Zillow can fit that bill too. Let me do the numbers. You know, I'll crunch the numbers or call my buddy Chris and figure out if there's something there too. But I like the Zillow story. So if it gets down to a reasonable price, I could get down dirty with you.
All right. Before, I know, Spencer, I know you got your guest coming, but I do have some breaking news.
Oh, boy.
Kathy is not putting Spacely Sprockets into her ETF.
Damn. No. What are they thinking over there?
Because she's going with Cogswell's Cogs.
What is that? I'm sorry.
It's the main business in Orbit City that rivals.
He's still talking Jetsons.
Spacey Sprockets.
He gets going, man.
My buddy DP sent me that one. Cogswell Cogs. You don't remember that? It's Spacely Sprockets' main competitor. Crickets.
Bueller. We got to get some transparent traders. Black Box Trading gave us $100.
All right.
Big tip there. Okay. I didn't even notice it. Get the tip bell. Ding, ding.
For that.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding.
There we go. All right.
Thank you.
All right.
You didn't give us a ticker. We did your ticker for $100. This show is
kind of off the rails. I'm just going to try to bring it back. Jay Young is the president and CEO of King Operation Corporation, joining us now for the first time on Pre-Market Prep. Jay, good morning. Oh, no, you're on mute. Turn your little microphone icon on at the bottom of the screen there, and then we should be able to hear you.
Maybe that's better.
That is better. How are we doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. All right. Let's pivot here. We were just talking about technology. Let's get away from that. Let's go to energy. And I wanted to talk to you a couple days ago, and then between the time that happened and now, the Suez Canal is freed. So I was going to ask you about that, but it seems like we're going back to normal there. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, they said, I think it was Friday afternoon, Saturday, they were saying that rising tides, you know, up there, and I was thinking rising tides lift all boats, and obviously it did.
All right, so we've been talking a lot on today's show about returning to fundamentals, about stocks and sectors, you know, pricing in that we're all the way done with this pandemic and going back to their pre-pandemic levels. At this point, Where do you feel the energy market is priced at as it relates to the pandemic? Is the market pricing in the fact that we're all the way done with this thing or not?
So that's a great question. And you know, my family's been in this business for 100 years, and my dad just swore to me to never get in this business because of cycles, and these cycles are horrendous. You know, and what my thought is going forward, you're going to see between $60 to $80 oil. Why do you see $60 to $80? Well, you know, when it goes to $80, Saudi Arabia, Russia are going to start throwing oil on the market to lower the price. They're not going to allow the big money like the private equity funds and all the deals before, because you saw a lot of private equity companies, a lot of public companies drilling. Yeah. Our production went up to 13 million. They're not going to allow that anymore. And the way they know to manipulate the markets now is to throw a lot of oil in the market. You know, pre-pandemic, Saudi Arabia, Russia were selling oil at half price to sell oil to oversupply us, which they did. And then the pandemic happened, and then we saw oil go minus, you know, for a short time. But that's what they're going to do. I don't think they're going to, they need to make money. They're in the business to make money. That's how they make their money, as a matter of fact, by exporting oil and selling oil. So when it goes too high, they're going to throw oil on the market. When it goes too low, they'll take some off. But they need to see $60 to $80 oil. That's my thought going forward.
But what about like the return of demand? You know, we're seeing deliveries, you know, from the EIA go up on a week over week basis. You know, demand is coming back. You know, I'm sure ethanol producers are happy and reading about, you know, the price of corn as demand goes up and we need more supply. Demand is recovering, is it not?
It is recovering, and it will do that shortly, but it's not. Don't forget, though, we need 20 million barrels plus a day in U.S. oil production. That's our U.S. appetite, 20 million. And we're only producing right now 10. You know, so we still need foreign oil. So the big challenge there is how much do we need from these, you know, countries like Saudi Arabia and Russia? So, but you are seeing demand coming back, and it will continue to come back. And we're not producing as much. Look at rig count. Rig count's way down. When rig count's down, we're not making as much oil. Wells decline in production. They may be producing 50% of what they started out in the very beginning. So it's going to go down. And as you see the supply go down and our demand goes up, you're going to see. And the only thing that I can see, because I mean, you know, I was on Jim Bohannon the other night. And I was thinking about it. And I was going, man, you know what? I don't see any reason why we're not seeing $100 oil. But when you think about it psychologically from these huge countries like Saudi Arabia and Russia, they don't want it to go to 100. So I believe they'll start bringing a lot more oil into our camps and offsetting our U.S. Like Putin said the other day in the Financial Times, he said, I'll replace every barrel of oil that Biden doesn't produce in the United States.
What about like from other sources, like the Gulf, for example, or Gulf of Mexico, is what I mean. Sure.
Yeah, Gulf of Mexico is a great place to drill. There's a lot of production offshore. You'll see more drilling there. Now, a lot of the federal grants and the permits and things that Biden is not allowing, like New Mexico for the Permian Basin, there's a lot of oil out there that he's not allowing to produce. And what happens when you don't produce that oil and we don't have it, that and our demand continues to go up, you're going to see a shortage. You know, I don't want to be overly optimistic. And we have an oil and gas company, King Operating, and we drill for oil and gas, and we have funds for investors and such. And I don't want to price our projects or think that the price will go to 100, because that's one of the worst things that we can do when we're looking at a prospect. So I don't be overly optimistic. What do they say? I forget. Expect the worst or plan for the best.
Plan for the best. No, expect the worst, plan for the best.
Something there you go. Hey, that's it. That's yeah. Yeah. And that's why we're putting in $60 as a futures price. You know, I mean, our projects make sense at $20, $40 a barrel, but I don't want to go, hey, I'm so overly optimistic that I'm going to go out here and been there, done that.
Well, it sounds like you're not. It sounds like you're not optimistic. It sounds like you're at best cautiously optimistic is what it sounds like.
Exactly. Like I said, our family's been in it for 100 years, and we've seen the ups and downs, and you know, I am very optimistic. We're putting together our funds for a 3 to 5 year exit before we get too green.
Okay.
Now, I always say greener, not green. We're not going green. We are going greener because of all of the different cars and things they just talked about a minute ago, but you know, that before all that happens, I'd like to have a big sell on our oil and gas assets.
Here we go from the chat. Plan for the worst and hope for the best. You and I butchered that, but that's the statement here. Yeah. So by and large, like you said, oil between 60 and 80, we're at 60. So and that's where you see this going, staying in this range indefinitely.
You know, for the next few years until, you know, I see peak demand in 5 years, 10 years, you know, something out. So I can see 60 now. I mean, look, Saudi Arabia, Russia, they didn't flood our market with half price oil just because they wanted to, you know, give away oil. They don't give away things. They want to make money. Yeah, so
right.
I believe that they're going to shut back, which they already have. They'll shut back our oil production to the United States. We're not producing as much. They probably have 30 people over there in the offices, and they're all thinking about every oil that we produce in the United States and what we're doing to produce oil, how we produce oil, how much is coming in. They know exactly where we are. And so I just feel like supply and demand which is the reason why price does go up and down, you know, and that's, they're going to keep it there. They need to make money, but they don't want it. They don't want to make too much money. They don't want to go to $100 oil because they know at that point, there's a lot of PE firms, you know, that have said before they're not getting the oil business. Well, at $100 a barrel, there's too many things that look good. So they don't want to get out of the business at $100 oil. They'll come back in. And Saudi Arabia, Russia, they've got too much oil and too much money to allow it to go to 100. But they still need to make money. That's why I feel like 60 is a good bottom.
Jay, what do you make? I know you're, you know, more of an oil guy, but what do you make of the run that the energy sector, which was so out of favor for so long? It had, maybe not in the last week or so, but this year, the first few months of the year, at least, I mean, energy just went on this huge run. What do you make of that?
Well, it's all about price and demand. We're still having a hangover, if you will, from all the stuff that happened during the pandemic. I mean, there wasn't anybody driving in cars. There wasn't airplanes. There wasn't. I mean, our demand just went way, way, way down. Now, 40% of a barrel of oil is for transportation. So 60% is for things such as your glasses, things such as the board behind you. You know, there's a lot of different uses for oil. So we still need demand. But when you take away the top of it and we're not producing as much, if you see, I mean, our production went from 13 million barrels a day in the United States to 12 to 11. And a lot of that big production increase from 5 to 13 million in 10 years has come from Shell, S-H-A-L-E, Shell wells that decline in production. They decline rapidly, and they're going to continue to do so. So if we're not replacing that oil, we have a problem with our supply in the United States. But when the big demand came and we're having this hangover from all the, man, we're producing so much oil. There was tankers off the coast of Hawaii and New York with all this oil, and oil's everywhere. Well, then that was really the oversupply that we had. And now you're seeing it come back. And I believe that we're equaling it out. As I mentioned, you have a lot of people in these foreign countries that have all the stats and all the exactly how much oil we're producing in the United States to how much they need to give us and not give us. And they're going to keep that oil tight. It's going to be tight.
I should note that we do have an OPEC meeting. Was it tomorrow? Is it tomorrow or no, Thursday, the 5th, yeah. Right? There is no OPEC. Is there any developments that you expect to come out of that? Any tradable events you think to come out of that or not really?
I don't think there's going to be anything major except for, you know, that they're going to cut production and they're going to see where we are today.
Okay.
Like I mentioned, all the big money's out of the oil and gas game right now. So you're not seeing the rig count go up.
Yeah.
And as soon as you see the rig count, you know, start sky. I mean, we're up four rigs this week, I believe, nine the week before. You know, we still need 300 or 400 to get back to where we were pre-pandemic. So, but I don't think there's anything major that's going to come up besides just tightening up and them watching over us, because that's they're pulling the strings, if you will, and I believe they're going to pull the strings a lot tighter than they ever have, because they allow this $100, $120. They got to $147 a barrel at one time. And will it ever go back there? I don't see it. Now, do I hope? I hope for our investors. That's because, I mean, our investors' tax income or tax benefits, monthly income, multiple on their investment in our funds when we develop and divest. I hope for them, but I'm very cautious to say that we'll see that big run to 100 to 120 or 140 because of things like the OPEC meeting and them watching over how much oil we're producing. And if we're tightening up in the United States with our federal lands and we're not allowed to drill for oil and gas, and there's a lot of institutions not coming into the game and allowing us the money, because it costs $100 million a year to get one rig running in the Permian Basin. That's a lot of money. And if we need 300 or 400 of those, and I can't do the math, but that's a lot for us to get the supply where we really need it to be energy independent, which, you know, I don't believe we'll ever be energy independent in my lifetime.
Here's a quick question from our chat. What about pipeline stocks or MLPs? Do you think they could benefit from Biden's infrastructure plan?
Yeah, well, you know, Biden with a Keystone pipeline, you know, I don't know. I'm still not scratching my head about exactly why that didn't happen, you know, because trucking it on roads and it costs $30 a barrel to transport it from Canada instead of pipelines, which is a lot cheaper, you know, but I do like pipelines, and most pipelines are on the quantity of oil and the price. So I do like pipelines right now, MLPs or energy transfers, things. I do like those stocks. I think that's really good. But, you know, we need more pipelines in the United States. And the reason why I say that is because of spillage. When we're putting oil into pipelines, it doesn't spill and you don't have trucks and that gets real messy. Pipelines are a lot better as long as they're drilled properly and put in place. I like pipelines. I don't know how many more pipelines, and I know the Permian Basin, big pipelines going from the Permian to the Gulf so we could export oil. But I do like that. Thanks, good play.
All right, Jay Young is president and CEO of King Operation Corporation down in Texas. Jay, thanks a lot for coming on today. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Anytime. Thank you. Right.
If you're listening via podcast, please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. Everyone have a good rest of your day.